hurried in, put her deadish brother on a gurney and went out the way they came. Lights came up on the scythes. They seemed so much farther away than before. It seemed like an impossibly long walk to cross the room back to them, and they began a bruising barrage of comments.
Sloppy.
Not at all. There's barely any blood.
She put the weapon in his hand. Do you know how risky that was?
And all that unnecessary banter. She was preparing him, making sure he was ready.
Why should that matter?
She showed courage, but more importantly, she was compassionate. Isn't that what we're called upon to be?
We're called upon to be efficient.
Efficiency must be in service to compassion. That's a matter of opinion.
Then the scythes fell silent, apparently agreeing to disagree. She suspected that Scythes Mandela and Mayor were on her side, and that the irritable one was not. As for the other two, she had no idea where they stood.
Thank you, Miss Terranova, said Scythe Mayor. You may go now. The results will be announced at Conclave tomorrow.
Scythe Curie was waiting for her in the hall. Citra found herself furious at the woman.
You should have told me! It would only have made it worse. And if they sensed that you knew before you went in that room, you would have been disqualified.
She looked at Citra's hands.
Come. You need to wash up. There's a bathroom just this way. How did it go with the other candidates?
Citra asked.
From what I heard, one young woman flatly refused and left the room. One boy began, but broke down and couldn't complete what he started. What about Rowan? Citra asked.
Scythe Curie wouldn't look at her.
He drew the pistol as his weapon. And?
Still, Scythe Curie hesitated.
Tell me! He pulled the trigger even before they finished reading him the instructions.
Citra grimaced at the thought. Scythe Curie was right. He didn't sound like the same Rowan she used to know. What had he been through to turn him so cold? She didn't dare imagine.
I am the blade that is swung by your hand. Slicing a rainbow's arc, I am the clapper. But you are the bell, tolling the gathering dark. If you are the singer, then I am the song. A threnody, requiem, dirge. You've made me the answer for all the world's need, humanity's undying urge. Threnody, from the collected works of H.S. Socrates. 39. Winter Conclave. At midnight, immunity for Citra Terranova and Rowan Damish expired. Either one could now be gleaned, and if the edict was followed, and the Scythedom would make certain that it was, one would glean the other. Around the world, Scythes convened to discuss matters of life, but more to the point, matters of death. The first conclave of the year for Midmerica was to be a historic one. Never before had Scythes permanently lost their lives in a gleaning event, and the controversial nature of that event made it even more significant, as well as the controversy surrounding one apprentice's three-month absence, following a bogus accusation by the Midmerican High Blade. Even the World Scythe Council had their eye on Fulcrum City today. And although the names of apprentices are rarely known beyond their regional bejeweling committee, scythes from every corner of the globe now knew the names of Citra Terranova and Rowan Damish. Fulcrum City was blistering cold that morning. Ice layered the marble steps leading up to the capital, making the stairs treacherous. More than one scythe slipped, spraining an ankle or breaking an arm. Healing nanites were taxed that morning, to the delight of spectators, who were thrilled by anything that slowed the scythe's ascent, allowing more photo ops. Rowan arrived alone in a public car, with no sponsor and no one to shepherd him in. He was dressed in the one color that scythes shunned, black. It made his green apprentice armband stand out and gave him a silent air of defiance. At Harvest Conclave he had been a footnote, if that. But now, spectators jockeyed for position to take his picture. He ignored them, looking at no one as he climbed the stairs, making sure to keep his footing firm. One scythe next to him stumbled on the ice and fell. Scythe Emerson, Rowan thought it was, although they'd never been introduced. Rowan reached out his hand to help the man up, but Emerson just glared at him and refused his help.
I want no assistance from you, he told Rowan.
The emphasis on the word you filled with more vitriol than anyone had expressed to Rowan in all his 17 years. But then, when he reached the top of the stairs, a scythe he didn't even know greeted him and said in a comforting voice,
You've endured more than any apprentice should, Mr. Damish. I do hope you achieve scythehood. And once you do, I hope we might share a pot of tea.
The offer sounded genuine, and not the product of political posturing. This was the way of things as he entered the rotunda. Hard glares from some, and comforting grins from others. It seemed few were undecided about him. He was either the victim of circumstance, or a criminal the likes of whom had not been seen since the age of mortality. Rowan wished he knew which of the two it was. Citra had arrived before Rowan. She stood, with Scythe Curie, in the rotunda, with no appetite to partake of the lavish breakfast spread. The conversation in the rotunda was, of course, all about the Tonest Cloister tragedy. And as Citra listened to various snippets of conversation, she found herself angered that it was all about the 4 dead scythes. No one lamented that so many Tonists were gleaned. Some, in fact, callously joked about it. In the wake of the Tonest tragedy, Conclave takes on a certain, resonance, don't you think? She heard someone say. No pun intended. But of course it was. Scythe Curie was even more anxious than she had been at Harvest Conclave.
Scythe Mandela told me that you performed well last night, she told Citra. But even as he said it, he was guarded. What do you think that means? I don't know. All I know is that if you lose today, Citra, I will never forgive myself.
It was absurd to think that the great scythe, Marie Curie, Grande Dame of Death, would care so much for her, and would even think there could be any failure on her own part.
I've had the benefit of being trained by the 2 greatest scythes who ever lived, you and Scythe Faraday. If that hasn't prepared me for today, nothing could have.
Scythe Curie beamed with bittersweet pride.
When this is over, and you are ordained, I hope you'll do me the esteemed honor of staying on with me as a junior scythe. Others will make advances, perhaps even from distant regions. They'll try to tell you there are things you can learn from them that you couldn't learn from me. Perhaps that's true. But I do hope you'll choose to remain anyway.
Her eyes were on the brink of tears. If she blinked, they would fall, but Scythe Curie kept them pooled on her lower lashes. Too proud to be seen weeping in Conclave. Citra smiled.
I would have it no other way, Marie.
It was the first time Citra had ever called her by her first name. She was surprised at how natural it felt. As they waited for Conclave to convene, other scythes came up to greet them. None spoke of Citra's detainment or her escape to the Chalargentine region, but some did joke with Marie about that embarrassing journal entry. In the age of mortality, love and murder often went hand in hand, quipped Scythe Twain. Perhaps our dear Scythe Faraday might have pegged you perfectly.
Oh, go glean yourself, Curie said,
only partially suppressing her grin.
Only if I can attend my own funeral, my dear.
Then he wished Citra good luck and sauntered off. That's when Citra saw Rowan enter the rotunda. It wasn't exactly as if silence fell all over the room, but the volume did dip significantly, and then rose again. There was a presence about him now. Not like that of a scythe, but something else. A pariah, perhaps. But never had a pariah had such a chilling effect on bringers of death. There were those who were saying that Rowan had killed those scythes in cold blood and set the fire to hide the evidence. Others said he was lucky to have survived and bore no guilt. Citra suspected that whatever the truth was, it was much more complicated than either of those things.
Don't talk to him,
Scythe Curie said when she saw her glancing in his direction.
Don't even let him see you looking his way. It will just make things more difficult for both of you.
I know,
Citra admitted, although she secretly hoped he would be brash enough to push through the crowd and come to her, and maybe say something,
anything,
that would prove to her he wasn't the unthinkable criminal people were saying he was. If she was chosen today, Citra would not defy the edict to glean Rowan. But she did have a plan that might save both of them. It was far from foolproof, and to be brutally honest with herself, it was more like a desperate grasping at straws than a plan. But even the faintest glimmer of hope was better than no hope at all. If she was deluding herself, at least it would allow her to get through this awful day. Rowan had played this day over in his mind many times, from beginning to end. He had decided that he would not go up to Citra when he saw her. He did not need an advisor to tell him it was better this way. Let them stay separate and apart, until that miserable moment of truth that would keep them apart forever. If she won, Rowan was certain she would glean him. She was duty-bound to do it. It would tear her apart, but in the end, she would do what had to be done. He wondered how she might go about it. Perhaps she would break his neck, bringing everything full circle, and wrapping up their doomed twin apprenticeship with a nice red bow. Admittedly, Rowan was afraid to die. But what he feared more than death were the depths that he now knew he was capable of reaching. The ease with which he had rendered his mother deadish during his test the night before spoke volumes about the person he'd become. He'd rather be gleaned than be that person. Of course, it was possible he'd be chosen instead of Citra. Then things would get interesting. He decided he wouldn't glean himself. That would be too pointless and pathetic a gesture. If he was ordained, he would defy the edict, invoking the 10th commandment, which clearly said he was beholden to no laws beyond the 10, including any edicts levied by the Scythedom. He would refuse to glean Citra, and defend her life by taking out any scythes who tried to do it for him, with bullet, blade, and his own bare hands. He would turn Conclave into a brutal and bloody battleground until they took him down, which wouldn't be easy, considering how skilled he'd become at killcraft, and how motivated he was to wreak as much havoc as possible. And the irony of it was that they couldn't even glean him for it. Once he was ordained, their hands were tied by the 7th commandment. They could punish him, though. They could make him die 1,000 deaths, and then lock him away for eternity. And it would truly be eternity, because he would never give them the satisfaction of gleaning himself. Another reason why he would rather be gleaned by Citra. A single death at her capable hands sounded awfully good when compared with the alternative. The breakfast spread in the rotunda was an elaborate one. Slabs of real smoked salmon, hard-crusted artisan breads, and a waffle station with every conceivable topping. Only the best for the Mid-American scythes. Rowan ate with rare gluttony that morning, for once allowing himself to fully sate his appetite, and as he ate, he stole a few glances at Citra. Even now she looked radiant to him. How ridiculous that he'd still be romanticizing her in these final hours. What could have once been love was now the resignation of a heart long broken. Luckily for Rowan, his heart had grown so cold, its fracturing could not hurt him anymore. Once Conclave convened, Citra found herself tuning out most of the morning's ritual, choosing to fill her mind with memories of the life she was about to leave. Because in one way or another, she would be leaving it. She focused on thoughts of her parents, and her brother, who was still in a revival center. If she was ordained today, the home where she grew up would never be home again. Her biggest consolation would be that Ben and her parents would have immunity from gleaning for as long as Citra lived. After the tolling of the names and the ritual washing, the entire morning was dedicated to a heated debate about whether or not fire should be banned as a method of gleaning. Usually Highblade's Inocrates did nothing but mediate and postpone discussions for a later date. The fact that he was advocating for the ban was something everyone in attendance took seriously. Even so, there were strong voices against it.
"I will not have my rights to bear arms trampled upon," railed one disgruntled scythe. "Every one of us should have the freedom to use flamethrowers, explosives, and any other incendiary device."
It was met with both boos and applause.
"We need this ban to protect us from tragic accidents in the future," insisted Xenocrates.
"It was no accident,"
someone shouted, and almost half the room voiced their bitter agreement. Citra looked to Rowan, who sat with two empty chairs on either side of him, for they were still earmarked for the dead.
He made no move to defend himself or to deny the claim. Scythe Curie leaned closer to Citra. As terrible as that fire was, there are plenty of scythes happy to see Goddard and his disciples permanently removed from duty. Although they'd never admit it, they're glad the fire happened, whether it was an accident or not. And there are a lot of others who admired Goddard, Citra pointed out. Indeed. The Scythedom seems evenly split on that matter.
Regardless, common sense finally prevailed, and fire was banned in Mid-America as a method of gleaning. At lunch, Citra, who still found she couldn't eat, watched from a distance as Rowan stuffed himself just as he had at breakfast, as if he had no care in the world.
He knows it's his last meal,
a scythe she didn't know suggested. Although the woman was clearly showing her support for Citra, Citra found herself annoyed.
I can't see how it's any of your business.
The scythe walked away, confused by Citra's hostility. At 6 that evening, all other conclave business ceased, and the day revolved into its final stages.
Candidates for scythehood, please rise,
commanded the conclave clerk. Citra and Rowan rose to a rumble of whispers in the assembly.
I thought there were 4, said the Highblade.
There were, Your Excellency, said the clerk. But the other 2 failed their final test and were dismissed.
Very well, then, said Xenocrates. Let's get on with it.
The clerk stood up, formally announcing them.
The Mid-American Scythedom calls Rowan Daniel Damish and Citra Querida Terranova. Please come forward.
Then, keeping their eyes fixed on Scythe Mandela, who waited for them before the rostrum with a single ring, Citra and Rowan strode to the front of the assembly hall to meet their destiny, one way or another.
It is with bittersweet joy that I watch the bejeweling of new junior scythes at the end of each conclave. Joy, because they are our hope, and still kindle the idealism of the first scythes in their hearts. But bittersweet, because I know that someday they will become so tired and jaded, they will take their own lives, as all those first scythes eventually did. Yet each time the new scythes are bejeweled, I still rejoice, because it allows me, if only for a few glorious moments, to believe that we will all choose to live forever.
From the Gleaning Journal of H.S. Curie. 40. The Ordained. Hello, Citra. It's good to see you.
Hello, Rowan.
Will the candidates please refrain from speaking to each other and face the conclave?
Said Xenocrates. The whispers and mumbles from the gathered scythes ceased the moment both Citra and Rowan faced them.
Never before had such silence fallen over the assembly hall.
Rowan smiled slightly, not out of amusement but out of satisfaction. The 2 of them, side by side, commanded an undeniable gravity that could silence 300 scythes. Whatever else happened today, Rowan would have this moment. Citra maintained a stoic facade, refusing to let the adrenaline flooding her system reveal itself on her face.
The Bejeweling Committee has studied your apprenticeships,
Scythe Mandela announced to them, although it was meant more for the entire conclave.
We have reviewed the performance on all 3 of your tests, the first 2 of which you both failed, but with extenuating circumstances both times. Clearly your instinct has been to protect each other. But the Scythedom must be protected first, at all costs.
Hear, hear!
Shouted one of the scythes in the back.
The committee's decision was not made lightly, continued Scythe Mandela. Know that we gave both of you the fairest consideration we possibly could.
Then he raised his voice even louder.
Candidates for scythehood, will you accept the judgment of the Mid-American Bejeweling Committee?
He asked, as if it were possible not to accept their decision.
I do, Your Honor,
said Citra.
So do I, Your Honor, said Rowan.
Then let it be known, said Scythe Mandela, that now and forevermore, Citra Terranova shall wear the ring of scythehood
and bear the burden of all the ring entails.
The room erupted in cheers, not just from her obvious supporters, but from just about everyone. Even those who were sympathetic to Rowan approved of the committee's decision. For in the end, what support did Rowan have in the Scythedom? Those who admired Goddard despised Rowan, and any who had given Rowan the benefit of the doubt were already rooting for Citra. Only now did it become clear that Citra was all but ordained from the moment Goddard and his disciples perished in the fire.
"Congratulations, Citra," said Rowan, beneath the roaring approval of the crowd. "I knew you would do it."
She found she couldn't even respond to him, couldn't even look at him. Scythe Mandela turned to her.
"Have you chosen your patron historic?"
"I have, Your Honor."
"Then take this ring I hold out to you. Put it on your finger and announce to the Mid-American Scythedom and to the world who you now are."
Citra took the ring, her hand shaking so much she almost dropped it. She slipped it on her finger, a perfect fit. It was heavy on her finger, and the gold of the setting was cold, but was quickly warmed by her body heat. She held her hand up as she had seen other ordained candidates do.
"I choose to be known as Scythe Anastasia," she told them, "after the youngest member of the family, Romanov."
The gathered scythes turned to one another, discussing her choice among themselves.
"Miss Terranova," said Highblade Xenocrates, clearly not pleased. "I can't say that this is an appropriate choice. The czars of Russia were known more for their excess than their contribution to civilization. And Anastasia Romanov did nothing of note in her short life."
"Exactly why I chose her, Your Excellency," Citra said, holding eye contact with him. "She was the product of a corrupt system, and because of that, was denied her very life, as I almost was."
Xenocrates bristled the slightest bit. Citra went on.
"Had she lived, who knows what she might have done? Perhaps she could have changed the world and redeemed her family name. I choose to be Scythe Anastasia. I vow to become the change that might have been."
The High Blade held her gaze, and held his silence. Then one scythe rose and began applauding. Scythe Curie. Then another joined her, and another. And soon the entire scythedom was on their feet, in an ovation, for the newly ordained Scythe Anastasia. Rowan knew they had made the right decision, and when he heard Citra defend her choice for patron historic, he admired her more than he ever had. Were he not already standing, he would have risen to his feet in ovation as well. Then, as the accolades died down and the scythes were seated, Scythe Mandela turned to Citra.
"You know what you have to do."
"I do, Your Honor."
"What method do you choose?"
"Blade,"
she said.
"So many of my trials seem to be by blade, this one should be no different."
And of course, a tray of knives was ready, just out of sight. It was now brought in by a junior scythe who had just been ordained at Harvest Conclave. Rowan watched Citra closely, but she would not meet his gaze. She looked over the tray of knives, finally settling on a nasty-looking bowie knife.
"I used one of these to kill my brother yesterday," Citra said. "I swore I'd never touch one again. But here I am."
"How is he?" Rowan asked. Finally, Citra looked at him. There was fear in her eyes, but also resolve.
"Good," thought Rowan. "Let her be decisive about this. It will be quicker." "He's in revival," she said, "with a hot fudge sundae on order for him when he wakes up."
"Lucky him." Rowan looked out at the grand elegy of scythes. At this moment, less of a conclave and more of an audience. "They're waiting for a show," Rowan said. "Shall we give it to them?" Citra nodded slightly. And with a sentiment that was heartfelt and true, Rowan said, "It is my honor to be gleaned by you, Scythe Anastasia." Then Rowan drew his last breath and prepared to accept her blade. But she wasn't ready to strike just yet. Instead, she looked to the ring on her other hand.
"This,"
she said, "is for breaking my neck." Then she drew her fist back and punched him in the face with such force it nearly knocked him off his feet. A collective gasp came from the crowd. This was something they were not expecting. Rowan reached up to feel blood spilling from a huge gash that her ring had cut across his cheek. Then, finally, she raised the knife to glean him, but just as she was about to thrust it into his chest, a shout came from the rostrum behind them.
"Stop!"
It was the parliamentarian. He held up his own ring. It was glowing red. So was Citra's. And as Rowan looked around, he could see that every scythe's ring within 10 yards was emanating the same glow.
"He can't be gleaned," the parliamentarian said. "He has immunity."
A roar of outrage came from the conclave. Rowan looked at Citra's ring, which was covered with his blood. It had transmitted his DNA to the immunity database even more effectively than if he had kissed it. He smiled at her in awe and absolute amazement.
"You're a genius, Citra. You know that, don't you?"
"It's honorable Scythe Anastasia to you," she said. "And I don't know what you're talking about. It was an accident."
But there was a twinkle in her eye that said otherwise.
"Order!"
yelled Xenocrates, banging his gavel.
"I demand this conclave come to order!"
The scythes began to calm down, and Xenocrates pointed an accusing finger.
Scythe Anastasia, you have blatantly violated a scythedom edict."
"I have not, Your Excellency. I was fully prepared to glean him. It was your own parliamentarian who stopped me. It never occurred to me that hitting Rowan would grant him immunity."
Xenocrates looked at her in utter disbelief, and then suddenly released a guffaw that he tried to stifle but couldn't.
"Sly and artful," he said. "With just enough plausible deniability, you'll do very well among us, Scythe Anastasia."
Then he turned to the parliamentarian and asked what options they now had.
"I suggest imprisonment for a year, until his immunity runs out."
"Is there still such a place where a person could be officially imprisoned?"
asked one of the other scythes. Then scythes around the assembly hall began to shout out their suggestions, some even offering to take Rowan in under house arrest, which could be good or bad, depending on their motive. As it began to devolve into a debate over Rowan's immediate future, Citra leaned into him and whispered,
"There's a tray of knives next to you, and a car waiting for you at the east exit."
Then she leaned away, leaving his future firmly in his own hands. He thought he could not be more impressed by her. She had just proved him wrong.
"I love you," he said.
"Same here," she responded. "Now get lost."
He was a wonder to watch. He took 3 blades from the tray and somehow managed to wield them all. Scythe Anastasia made no move to stop him, but even if she had, it would have been no use. He was too quick. He hurled himself like a fireball down the center aisle. The scythes closest to him leaped into action, trying to stop him, but he kicked and spun and sliced and flipped. No one could get a hand on him. To Scythe Anastasia, he seemed some deadly force of nature. Of the scythes in his way, the lucky ones only had their robes sliced. The less lucky ones found themselves with wounds they never even saw inflicted. One, Scythe Emerson, she believed, would be requiring a trip to a revival center. And then he was gone, leaving pandemonium in his wake. As the high blade tried to regain order, Scythe Anastasia looked to her hand and did something that was very strange for a scythe to do. She kissed her own ring, getting just the slightest bit of Rowan's blood on her lips. Enough for her to remember the moment forever. The car was waiting, just as Citra had said. He thought it would be a public car. He thought he would be alone. Neither was the case. As he hopped in, he saw a ghost in the driver's seat. After all he had been through today, this was the moment that nearly made his heart stop.
"Good evening, Rowan," said Scythe Faraday. "Close the door. It's positively arctic outside."
"What?"
said Rowan, still trying to wrap his mind around the moment.
"How are you not dead?"
"I could ask you the same question, but time is of the essence now, please. Close the door."
So Rowan did, and they sped off into the frosty Fulcrum City night.
"Have we ever had
an enemy worse than ourselves. In the age of mortality, we warred ceaselessly with one another. And when there was no war to be made, we beat down one another in our streets, our schools, our homes, until war turned our gaze outward again, placing the enemy at a more comfortable distance. But all such conflict is a thing of the past. There is peace on earth, goodwill toward all humankind. Except. And that's the thing. There is always an exception. I haven't been a scythe for long, but I can already see that the scythedom is in danger of becoming that exception. Not just here, in Mid-America, but worldwide. The first scythes were true visionaries, and saw the wisdom of continuing to cultivate wisdom. They understood that the soul of a scythe needed to remain pure, free from malice and greed and pride, but filled with conscience. However, rot grows on even the sturdiest of foundations. If the conscience of the scythedom fails, replaced by the avarice of privilege, we could become our own worst enemy again. And to complicate it, new wrinkles are being added to the fabric of the scythedom every day. Take, for instance, the latest rumor, which in the months since I was ordained has spread beyond the scythedom and is whispered among the general population. According to the rumor, there is someone out there who is seeking out corrupt, despicable scythes and ending their existence by fire. One thing is certain. He's not an ordained scythe. And yet people have started to call him Scythe Lucifer. I'm terrified that it might be true. But more terrified that I might want it to be true. It was never my desire to be a scythe. I suppose that might make me a good one. I don't yet know, because it's all so new, and I still have so much to learn. For now, I must give all my attention to gleaning with compassion and conscience, with hopes that it will help our perfect world stay perfect. And if Scythe Lucifer comes my way, I hope he'll see me as one of the good ones, the way he once did.
From the Gleaning Journal of H.S. Anastasia.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Scythe, written by Neil Shusterman, performed by Greg Tremblay. Executive producers Ryan McGavin and Mike Charzik. Copyright 2016 by Neil Shusterman. Production copyright 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.